Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our very special Survivor Series recap edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Survivor Series at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on our conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Let's get right to this, folks, because there's a lot to cover in a little time, isn't there? So we're going to start out with the pre-show, where Damian Priest takes on Shinsuke Nakamura. And while we had speculated on yesterday's show that this could be a real sleeper of a match, this could be the one to watch, it did not turn out that way. There was very little chemistry between Damian Priest and Shinsuke Nakamura, to be perfectly honest, and the match was built around when is Damian Priest going to snap because of Rick Boogs playing the guitar on the outside. He warned him several times to stop. We knew where this was heading, and when Damian Priest looked like he had a submission hold that could potentially win him the match, he lets go of it to jump outside the ring and confront Rick Boogs, which leads to Shinsuke Nakamura going outside the ring, Damian Priest breaking the guitar, hitting Boogs and Nakamura with it, and getting disqualified. This is a horrible way to start a pay-per-view. Horrible way to start a pay-per-view. Number one, let's be dead honest, would it have hurt to just let Damian Priest win the match? Shinsuke Nakamura has been pinned in a tag team match a couple of weeks ago. It's not like you're protecting him. It's not like Shinsuke Nakamura is this undefeated guy that you've been protecting and protecting and protecting. Far from it. You're using Shinsuke to really build up Rick Boogs, not the opposite. And to be honest with you, Damian Priest could have used this win. And it would have been okay if you did something where, oh, well, Shinsuke was distracted because Damian Priest went after Rick Boogs. But not the way you did it. Just let the pin happen or the submission happen, whichever. Let Damian Priest have his moment, because this way neither guy looks very good. Damian Priest looks like a guy so easily distracted as a champion that if one little thing irritates him or goes his way, he's going to snap and get disqualified. That's a good champion? That's a focused champion? I don't think so. And Shinsuke Nakamura looks like he couldn't take advantage of the fact that the man was totally distracted and 100% open to attack. So this did nothing for either one of them, Mike. I was highly disappointed. I did not think this was the match that we had thought it was going to be by any stretch.
The only thing that it did was further the whole, he gets distracted and he snaps. To the point of, well, we can see where it's going now, that at some point they're going to do the whole anger management angle thing.
Oh, God,
right?
Not.
Let's hope they don't. I'm just saying what I'm seeing, all right?
I hope they don't do it. To me, it makes him look weak. It makes him look like anyone who wants to that belt, all they have to do is distract him, get him off his pace, and he'll gladly get disqualified, or he'll gladly release a hold in which you're about to submit. If I was there for that writing of that match, I would say, no. He can't have that hold locked in. And then let go? So you're going to tell me that he has the match won, he's going to let go because he's that unfocused. Where's that heading? Didn't like it, Todd, and I thought this match was underwhelming, to be honest.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with this match of Nakamura and Damian Priest there, this is not the match I expected how that ended in every shape or form. I didn't know he was going to turn heel right then and there last night at the Survivor Series.
I don't know if he did turn heel. See, that's the thing. He's done this before. He's done this before where he snapped. He just snapped on heels, but So I don't know if he has turned heel. They're just trying to project, I have two different personalities. If things don't go my way, I snap and I become very violent. Well, where's that leading? If there's a difference between snapping and becoming very violent on your opponent and snapping and totally getting distracted to the point where you don't even care if you're winning and losing and you got a championship belt. See, that's where the difference is. If Shinsuke Nakamura did something to him that caused him to snap on Shinsuke, I'd say, oh, okay. But distractions causing you to totally lose focus in your match and not even care whether you win or lose anymore is an absurdity. Did not care for it. Next up, we get Becky Lynch versus Charlotte Flair, which hilariously, the pre-show panel said, this is really the feature match. It's a feature match, and it's the first one up? Hardly. However, I think we can safely say at this stage that we were swerved by Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. Not only did they put on a very, very, very strong match, but during the course of that match, there were some moves done that if you didn't trust the other person, you're not doing it. You're not doing the move. So I do think while there might have been a little bit of, back and forth at some point, I think that's water under the bridge. They put on a great match. Now, I will say this. I don't like the ending for one reason and one reason only. The reaction of Charlotte Flair. The reaction of Charlotte Flair was, I'm just going to laugh it off. You out-Charlotte Flaired me. You cheated and got away with it. The victory means nothing. I don't like that. I don't like that. Because if you don't care you lost, why do I care you lost? And that's the mood I got from Charlotte Flair is, oh, you pulled a fast one on me. You didn't really win. I'm not even considering that a win. I'm just laughing. Nice going. You outfoxed me. Now, I want her irate. I want her irate so she can be on television saying, yeah, that's some way to win. See, that's what a heel does, is come in and say, well, that's some way to win. And then when they say, well, you were trying it. No, I wasn't. I was trying to balance myself on the rope. I was losing balance. I in no way was trying to pin her that way. Becky Lynch purposely did it because she cheated. For Charlotte Flair to just laugh it off means your victory means nothing. So what? I'm not even bothered by it. I don't like that. Having said that, however, Mike, this was an excellent match, one of the better ones of the night.
You know what? I'll say this. We on this show tend to get things right more often than we get them wrong, right? And so,
yep.
And we said that this could be the match of the pay-per-view. And to me, other than the ending, it was the match of the pay-per-view. It stole the show, in my mind.
It was definitely a great match. And do you agree with me, Mike, that this animosity that they've been playing up seems to be a little overblown?
Yeah, we basically speculated this on Sunday or on Friday that this was a swerve, this was a work, you know, that they're still friends and they're still probably close friends. You know, like you said, there's some moves in that match that if they weren't friends, you know, they wouldn't have tried those moves, you know. I mean,
yeah,
look, here's something else to think about. There was a point where Becky punched her in the nose, and all throughout the rest of the match, she sold that injury.
Yes, and they did the slapping to make it look like they were really fighting, almost shades of Nia Jax and Charlotte. So early on, it didn't take me more than a minute or two into the match, maybe 3 minutes, before I said, yeah, we were worked, which is fine. I'm glad. I'm happy when I get worked once in a while because, you know, that's what wrestling's all about. So an excellent match, Todd, and we called the winner pretty much, I think. It had to be Becky, so I give this match pretty high marks.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, when that match with Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair we watched last night, we witnessed, There was a lot of fake finishers too last night. Becky Lynch tried to use the Charlotte Flair's figure eight move slash figure four slash figure eight, try to get her submit. And also Charlotte Flair tried to use Becky Lynch's finishing maneuver too.
Yeah, the disarmer. Yeah, it was a very well plotted out match, no question. So next we get Team Raw, which consists of Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, Kevin Owens, Austin Theory, and Bobby Lashley, versus Team SmackDown, which is Drew McIntyre, Xavier Woods, Jeff Hardy, Happy Corbin, and Sheamus. Now, from the get-go, Kevin Owens says, I want to be in there first. On the pre-show, he said, I'm going to prove to everyone that I'm not the guy everybody thinks I am. I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to show everybody that I'm a team player. The very first thing he does is abandon his team. I guess this is to further the heel turn. I would say that's a special heel turn, as far as I'm concerned. And it left them with a one-man short disadvantage. From that point on, this match was okay, but it wasn't better than okay. We already had it figured that Lashley and McIntyre would eliminate each other. I mean, we nailed that solid yesterday. We knew that was happening. And we said it probably should happen, and it probably should have. Here's what shouldn't have happened. If you're going to leave it down to Austin Theory and Seth Rollins, then they should have survived. I don't like the fact that Austin Theory got pinned, especially by Jeff Hardy. Last person that got pinned by Jeff Hardy and went to Palookaville was Cross, Karrion Kross. Now, Austin Theory, who I think was undefeated up to this point, has now lost to Jeff Hardy. I don't know what the situation is with Jeff Hardy all of a sudden being someone you have a big vested interest in. You never did. You never did. So I didn't like the ending that way. As far as Seth Rollins winning, once it got down to Seth Rollins and Austin Theory versus Jeff Hardy, I think we were pretty damn sure that Seth Rollins wasn't losing to Jeff Hardy, so I knew Seth Rollins was going to be a survivor. I will give props to two things last night. One is they mentioned Austin Theory's involvement with Seth Rollins prior to Austin Theory being taken off of the main roster for a while, which I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear that they don't want us to think he's a different character and that never happened, because that annoys me. Number two is I really thought Pat McAfee and Byron Saxton, when they had the chance to work together, were really, really good together. I mean, really good together. They seemed very enthusiastic, very... It reminded me a little bit of like Monsoon and Heenan. No, it's near that good, but it reminded me a little of that, and I really enjoyed the couple of matches that they were able to do together. Mike, as far as the winner, well, Team Raw wins again. That's three in a row for Team Raw to start this pay-per-view. And I, other than Austin Theory being eliminated, I think we had this pretty well figured.
I think so, too. And I'll say this, look, I said it with the Becky Lynch match. Once that match happened, none of these other matches, including the Roman Reigns, which we'll talk about, you know, could hold a count, because I think that was the match of the night. But yeah, you're right. Other than Austin Theory getting pinned, I had no problem. And they even mentioned the fact that at one point they talked about Austin Theory, the problem with Austin Theory and the Mysterios.
Yeah, absolutely they did. So, I mean, that's one good thing, is they didn't make us look like complete and total jackasses and say they don't even know each other, which they do sometimes. Now, the weird thing here is Vince McMahon showed up with an egg, and I guess it's the egg from the Netflix film that The Rock is doing, and he calls Roman Reigns in to tell him this is not the prop that they use. This is really Cleopatra's egg. It's worth $100 million. and The Rock gave it to me. I have no idea where this is going. Later on, it gets stolen. I have no idea where this is going. If this is the way you're going to try to introduce The Rock into this mix, this is a terrible, terrible way to introduce The Rock into the mix. Because nobody believes it. So, I don't know. I mean, it was good to see Vince McMahon again, but that was pretty lame. As far as the men's Survivor Series match, Todd, pretty much the way we thought it might be.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about the Austin Theory and the Seth Rollins thing, when Austin Theory was in the Monday Night Messiah stable with Murphy like a year and a half ago, it was pretty good to see them together again as a little clique there.
Yeah, and at least they mentioned it, you know. But I think it was way too early to have Austin Theory pinned. He's got a good new character now. He's got a really good chance to do something with it, and I don't want to see him pinned. And if he was going to be pinned, I sure as hell don't want to see him pinned by Jeff Hardy. And people who do, I don't want to hear anybody complain then. If you're saying, oh, I thought it was perfectly fine, okay. Well, then I never want to hear you complain about 40-something athletes going over 20-something athletes ever again. Oh, they're letting all the old guys win, and they're burying their young talent. Well, what is this? Think Jeff Hardy's going to be the champion tomorrow? Think Jeff Hardy's going to be around in 5 years? What is this? Doesn't make any sense. And then just literally minutes after he pins Austin Theory, you know, Seth Rollins takes him out. So what's the rub we get on that? Well, Jeff Hardy's better than Austin Theory. He's not better than Seth Rollins. Okay, well, then you bury Austin Theory to a certain extent. We know where his placement is, right? He's mid-card. Him and Jeff Hardy can have very, very competitive back-and-forth wins. Well, then I guess he's absolutely no match for anybody else higher up the chain. So I didn't like that. I thought that was a mistake. We then get a 15-minute Pizza Hut commercial. I'm not kidding you. The Street Profits come out. I didn't know what the hell they had. The Street Profits come out with Pizza Hut pizza. Literally saying on the mic, nobody out pizzas the Hut. They start giving out pizza to the announce team. At one point in this match, R-Truth rolls out, grabs a slice of pizza, and tries to bribe Omos and Otis with it. This match revolved around pizza. Even the ending, when AJ Styles tried to get the pizza. And the Street Profits get it away from him and throw it all into the audience. Almost wins the Battle Royal. We can pat ourselves on the back. We basically said we don't know who's in it, but if Almost is in it, he's winning it, and we were right. The way AJ Styles was eliminated is ridiculous. Wouldn't be allowed. They're saying, well, because Almost touched him, it's considered an almost elimination. No, it's not. You're going to pull him back in the ring. A guy who was already eliminated took him out. How's AJ Styles out of this? You know, when this whole thing happened, my first thought was Styles is going to wait till last. Almost is going to win. And then Styles is going to order Almost to just eliminate himself. And Almost ain't going to do it. And we're going to see the breakup right here. We saw nothing of the kind. Nothing of the kind. And to add insult to injury, you've just made Otis this mean, nasty, no longer friendly character. And he gladly takes the pizza and starts chowing down on it. Well, that's throwback to old Otis. This was pretty much a disaster, Mike. It was basically just a Pizza Hut commercial. Not sure we got Mike there. So I'll go back to Todd. Todd, what do you think of this advertisement for the Hut?
It was okay, but I like the Pizza Hut commercial, but 18 minutes is too long for me to watch.
Yeah. An 18-minute Pizza Hut commercial. I don't know. Listen, you had a couple of people in it that I was surprised, put it that way. I thought you were really going to have just the leftovers, and at least you did have Street Profits and AJ Styles and Almost, and you had Shanky, and you had Apollo Crews. You had some people in that that wasn't totally just the leftovers. But to see AJ Styles involved in what basically is just a big ad for Pizza Hut, Mike, was really, really lame.
Yeah, it was really lame. What I was going to say is we've been screaming for this for a while now. If you're trying to find people to advertise for, you go out and find people who actually want to advertise on your product, you know, on your shows. Obviously, Pizza Hut wants to advertise with the WWE. Now, you know, we don't know whether or not the WWE is going to sell, whatever. But at least they're finding people that actually want to advertise on their product.
I'm okay with them advertising on the product. I'm not okay with them basically taking over a match and using a match as an advertisement. Let's hope that nobody, no condom company ever wants to advertise with them, or we may see a return to the rated R superstar status of WWE. You can't do this. If you wanted the Street Profits to bring down some Pizza Hut and then we get on with the match, I guess that's fine. Once it starts interjecting itself into the match with people offering people pizza, after with AJ Styles trying to get to the pizza, it's all about pizza. It's not even about the match. I thought this was The Rock's big celebratory battle royal. This was Pizza Hut's celebratory battle royal. By the way, The Rock not only did not show up, he didn't even tape record a message. That's odd. I'm sorry, but if you're giving me a 25th anniversary of my debut show, I can't take 3 minutes on my cell phone to say thanks to everybody and, you know, 25 years ago I made my debut, my life was changed forever and blah, blah. You can't say that. You can't find 3 minutes to say that. That's weird. And it makes me think that there might be something going on we don't know about. Anyway, we get the Raw Tag Team Champions, RK-Bro, versus the SmackDown Champions, the Usos. This was a match I really did think was going to steal the show, and it was a really good match. Stole the show, but it was a good match. But Raw wins again. Now, at this point, I'm saying to myself, well, you know the Usos are going to win because Raw's won everything, even the Battle Royal. It's a clean sweep for Raw up to this point. So I said, well, it's about time that SmackDown gets a victory. So quite obviously, the Usos are going to win this. Wrong. Wrong. The Usos lose. Pretty soon, the Usos are going to be like the Miztourage, where the Miz wins, but they're just goofy. They always lose. I don't want to see that. I know it was hard fought, and I know it was very close, but I'm sorry. RK-Bro needed to take this loss. Simple and to the point. They needed to take this loss because what you needed to establish was the bloodline is dominant on SmackDown. SmackDown ain't winning anything else, so the bloodline has to be dominant. And they weren't, Mike, and I just think it's a mistake. Not that it was a bad match. I just think it's a mistake booking the ending.
Right. I don't know if there's anybody you can put the Usos with that it would be a bad match. You know, I mean, we know what they've done with the with New Day. We know that. We've seen it. We want to see it again. But anybody else, I think it doesn't matter who you put them with. It's going to be a good match. Possibly a great match, but definitely a really good match, you know. So I wasn't – and look, we know right now that Randy Orton is happy with what he's doing. And when Randy Orton's happy and motivated, you got something. I do agree with you that they probably should have lost that match. And this probably should have been the point at which, you know, we started to see some cracks. You know,
I would think so. I mean, again, we're at match five, and Raw's won them all. Raw's won them all. So while it was a good match, Todd, I disagree with the ending. I think it's making SmackDown look pretty weak.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with the Usos RKO or something like that.
RK
it was
Bro,
a pretty
yeah.
good match, but it was not the match of the night. The wrong team won, but we got to live with that.
Yeah, the wrong team did win only because you already knew the outcome of all the other matches. See, it's not like this was not predetermined. Somebody wrote all these endings, and you had to say, well, wait a minute. We're going out pretty heavy on Raw here. At least if we're going to let Raw win everything, let the Bloodline look dominant. That means Roman and the Usos. Aside from that, if Raw wants to win everything, okay. But if we're going to go that route, let the Bloodline look dominant. No, you didn't do it. You didn't do it at all. And the worst is yet to come. The worst is yet to come. Because we then have the women's Survivor Series match. Team Raw's Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan, Carmella, and Zelina Vega. Versus Team SmackDown, Sasha Banks, Shotzi, Shayna Baszler, Natalya, Toni Storm. Carmella's going to start the match, but she cannot find her mask. So she tags out and looks for her mask, tags back in, tries to get the mask on before. Instead of getting it on before she gets onto the ring apron, she's trying to get it on while she's on the ring apron, and then she's trying to get it on when she's technically in the match, which leads to her getting wrapped up by Toni Storm and losing. Carmella's career is over. Carmella's a comedy act now. This is a shame, because when Carmella was being a serious athlete, she was far better than people think she was. In the James Ellsworth days, she was getting very close to being able to be one of the top heels in the company. And they just abandoned her. And now she's just a ditzy, know-nothing, untalented. This is how they're portraying her. Untalented, egomaniac who has more concern about wearing a mask than wrestling. Horrible disservice. Horrible disservice to her. Carmella as we know her, unless they reinvent her again, Carmella as we know her is done. No one's ever going to take her seriously again after this. It's a total debacle, Mike, and it's a waste of talent because she really does have talent.
Right. It really is a waste of talent. And, I mean, if I were Carmella, I wouldn't be happy. And, frankly, if I were Corey Graves, I wouldn't be happy. You know, we know that the fans know they're together, all right? They know right. They're together. So if I'm Corey Graves, I wouldn't be happy either. Let me address the big, in my mind, the big elephant in the room. Where was Naomi?
I know. Makes sense. Makes no sense. Mike, I said if you're going to have somebody walk out on the show, if you wanted to have one of the girls on the alternate team walk out and Naomi has to be a fill-in against Sonya Deville, against Sonya Deville's wishes, go for it. But you see, they already had this match planned out, and the way they had it planned out was very simple. Sasha Banks gets eliminated by her own teammates, which I don't even think is legal. But if it is, her own teammates eliminate her, which leaves 4-1. By the way, Rhea Ripley went down to crashing defeat. Yeah, she's going to be a superstar. Now, listen, 2-on-1, 3-on-1. I'm starting to get nervous when it's 3-on-1. When it's 4-on-1, that's insane. I wanted Bianca Belair to win, and I said, I think Bianca Belair will win and will be Survivor. I said that yesterday, and so did the rest of this panel. But you can't do it like this. And the reason you can't do it like this is you have single-handedly destroyed the SmackDown Women's Division. You have basically said Bianca Belair, hurt as she is, having wrestled for I don't know how long, can easily dispatch every single one of them, no problem. Okay, well, then they're not very good. And if they're not very good, why are they on your roster? It would be one thing if, you know, I thought perhaps it would come down with Shotzi Blackheart and Sasha against Bianca, and those two would not be able to coexist, and they'd get into a fight, and Bianca would take advantage of that, which that could work. It's only 2-on-1, and then really it's not even that because they're fighting each other. That would have made more sense. This makes no sense. This is basically saying, I don't need any teammates. Okay, deal. Sasha Banks was eliminated, but might as well leave her in. Maybe she'd have beat her too, huh? Holy mackerel. So at this point, Bianca Belair is single-handedly the best wrestler, I guess, on Raw, because quite obviously she took every single girl except for Sasha out of this team. And pretty easily. It's not like at the end of the match she was laying there in a heap and they say, oh, my God. She's, you know, everything she had she left in the ring. She can't even move. She's laying in a heap. She won, but at what cost? What's this going to take out of her? Look, she can't even celebrate. Which at least if you're going to do it, do that. At least if you're going to make her a one-woman army, then at least tell her, well, sell the hell out of it. By the time you do this ending one, you got to be so exhausted and so tired, you can't even celebrate. Just lay there. Have the referee help you up. Stumble out of the ring. Fall if you want to. Yep, I'm dancing. I'm fine. I could do this for another hour. Okay, well, then everybody on SmackDown sucks. You have just single-handedly destroyed the SmackDown Women's Division minus Sasha Banks. And I think that's just plain stupidity, Mike.
It's stupidity, and it makes the decision not to use. I'm going to go back to it again, not to use Naomi in this situation. Even poorer, because think about it. We could have got a good 10 minutes or 15 minutes of Naomi versus, you know. Before Naomi gets, you know, eliminated or whatever, we could have gotten a good 10 to 15 minutes of Naomi and you know, Bianca being athletic as hell, and we would have enjoyed that, you know?
Yeah, we didn't get anything like that. What we ended up getting was, listen, I'm all for building up Bianca Belair. I said yesterday she has to win. Can't win like this. See, the WWE always has this weird way of giving the fans the right decision, but doing it in the worst possible way they can. They always seem to do that. So we all said, yeah, Bianca needs to rebound here. She needs to be made to look strong. And she did. So if I'm booking this match, I say, well, look, let the other girls on the team eliminate everybody. Bianca won't eliminate anybody until we get to Sasha Banks and Shotzi. Those are going to be the last two left. And Bianca's going to be the last girl left. And she's going to go through hell with Sasha Banks for a while. Then we're going to get Shotzi and Sasha to kind of not coexist very well, start breaking down. She's going to end up pinning Shotzi, and it's her and Sasha Banks left, and it's going to be Shotzi coming back and doing something to Sasha, causing Bianca Belair to win. That's it. That's it. To have her go through this gauntlet of every single hand-picked SmackDown Women's Survivor Series team member and then act like, well, I'm still fresh. Nobody even laid a glove on me. That's the way she was acting. Then what does that say about the SmackDown Women's Division? Four of your top five hand-picked top dogs couldn't come close. They were single-handedly eliminated by one person. I'm sorry, that makes your division look terrible. That is a huge, gigantic, colossal mistake. And that's going to be one they're going to live to regret, because why should I put any emphasis on any of these women in the SmackDown division now, except for Sasha? I shouldn't. Anyway, we get to the final match, which is Roman Reigns versus Big E. Now, to me, if I had to choose match of the night, it would be very tough, because this was really, really good. And for once, the WWE did the right thing. They didn't give us a screw job ending. They didn't give us, here come the Usos, here come the New Day. They didn't give us any of that bullshit. They didn't give us any of it. We got a very solid match. Roman Reigns sold Big E very well. Big E came out looking pretty damn good in this match. At the same time, I have to take my hat off to Big E. Big E did something that very few wrestlers do, and that's psychologically very few wrestlers do. And that is, he's making the big comeback. He's gotten beat up for a while. He's making that big comeback. He survived the spear. And he's talking to Roman Reigns saying, all right, we're going to play some games now. This is what I've been waiting for my whole life. And he's smashing around Roman Reigns, knowing in a few seconds I'm losing. In other words, he sort of let Roman Reigns cut him off at the heels with the big comeback. That makes it look much more real. That makes it feel much more real. And Big E's selling of that second spear and the pinfall was far better. Look at Big E at the end of the match compared to Bianca Belair. Big E just lost to one guy. And he's on the floor, gasping for breath. His eyes are bugged out of his head. He didn't roll out of the ring and say, I lost. I'm walking back to the dressing room. I hate when people do that. Oh, I just got hit with a devastating move, but I'm going to roll out of the ring and walk back to the dressing room in 3 seconds. Really? You're not even going to get your bearings? Well, Big E did not do that. Big E is far better than he's been given credit for. Excellent champion. And someone, again, that this loss does not hurt him. As a matter of fact, this loss helps him because he looks like a vulnerable champion. He looks like a guy who he's going to give you everything he's got, but he is beatable. So that when he goes into a match against someone, you say, I'm not 100% sure he's going to win. I have a feeling, but I don't know for sure. In other words, he's almost like an underdog champion. That's a very good thing to have when you're a babyface. That's a very good thing to have. For a long time, the WWE didn't have that. I mean, with Hulk Hogan, it was, you knew Hulk Hogan was winning. It was almost a moot point. He's going to pop up, wave the finger at you. He's not losing. So it's kind of boring. Now, before that, they had like Bob Backlund. You always thought he was losing. You always thought he's not going to be able to get by this guy. He's not tough enough to get by this guy. And then somehow he'd do it. Big E is that kind of champion. You've portrayed him as vulnerable. And because you portrayed him as vulnerable, he's interesting to watch. He's very interesting to watch. And Roman Reigns, you portrayed as a guy who can do this by himself if he wants to. See, that's another big thing. For a while, it was like, well, without the Usos, Roman Reigns is losing to everybody. You almost destroyed him with the Finn Balor thing. You almost destroyed him with that. You brought him back considerably now that he's taken Big E out clean and in a hard-fought victory. And it's a straight-up victory. So I thought this was an excellent match, Mike. I thought it was very good storytelling. I don't think it hurt either one of the guys. It was just enjoyable to watch.
Right, and that's the thing. And again, I'll say it again, and we've said it before. For those who don't think that Roman Reigns is a good professional wrestler, you're smoking rope.
Yep.
You know, the guy is excellent. He's very good. He's good on the mic. He's good in the ring. And he's good with psychology, you know. So he's a very, very good professional wrestler. And you're right. I mean, the last time they had something like this was when Daniel Bryan was a face champion.
That's right.
Right? Yeah, Daniel Bryan was a smaller guy, underdog guy. But, you know, you look at him and you'd say, okay, how is he going to beat Brock Lesnar? How is he going to beat X, Y, and Z, who is much bigger than him?
Right.
And, you know, and he found a way to do it for a long period of time until he didn't, you know. And that's where I think they're headed with Big E. He's going to find a way to beat people until he doesn't, you know, until he runs up against somebody like a Brock Lesnar or somebody like that, you know. So
yeah, they're doing an excellent job with Big E. And again, hats off to Roman Reigns too, because if you watch this match very carefully, there are a lot of wrestlers who they have this weird thing about they don't want to show any ass. You know, they're like, well, I'll sell his punches and kicks. I'll sell his maneuvers, but I don't want him to not sell mine. Roman Reigns did that spot where he gave him two Superman punches, and Big E basically just popped right up from him. Then he gave him the third one, which he thought finished him, turned around and started to do the, you know, I'm setting up for whatever, turned around, Big E's back on his feet, and you can, he literally looks over at Paul Heyman like, hey, that's impossible. What am I supposed to do now? And Heyman's burying his head in his hands, and I'm saying, see, this is where you're selling Big E. This is where psychologically you're showing Roman Reigns is saying, no one's ever done that before. How do I handle somebody who can take those type of punches and really not be that fazed by them? He did the same thing when he kicked out of the first spear. He's just looking like, wow, where do I go from here? That doesn't even make any sense. When you're able to do that, when you're perfectly willing to show some ass and say, he can undersell my moves to make himself look, I'm winning in the end anyway, so I'm going to put him over by having him undersell some moves so that at the end of this match, you can come away with a feeling like, Jesus Christ, man, Big E took everything that Roman Reigns had to offer and kicked out until the very end. It actually furthers Big E's image. So I think Roman did an excellent job in this match, Todd, and so did Big E.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, the match with Big E and Roman Reigns there last night, excuse me, like you said, there was like I said before, with the finishers, false finishes, like in the women's match. Big E hit again in a few times.
Yeah, Roman did he hit the big ending, Mike? I don't think Big E hit that. Every time he went for it, he hit it once and Roman got his hand on the ropes, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah. Again.
I mean, we've seen that happen with different people where that type of maneuver, they hit it, but they play it off as poor ring positioning because the guy was either able to get the foot on the rope or the hand on the rope. Or he's underneath the rope or something where the pinfall is not valid, you know?
Right. So once again in this match, the gimmick was Big E legitimately kicks out of Roman's finisher. Roman cannot kick out of Big E's finisher. He was just lucky where the ring placement was. So that also protects Big E's finisher, Mike.
Yes, it does. And look, we've had a problem with the WWE and when they're not protecting finishers.
Absolutely, and they normally don't. I mean, there's a few select ones they do, but most of the time they don't. Either way, both of these guys gave a really good performance. Both of these guys absolutely deserve to be the champion. Both of these guys are excellent professional wrestlers, and they gave out a great match. However, this whole thing felt like an afterthought because we didn't really care who won the women's Survivor Series match. We didn't really care who won the men's Survivor Series match. We didn't really care if Nakamura or Damian Priest won to any degree because there's no storyline behind it. Very few of these matches did we really care about one way or the other. I would argue Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. People cared about, and Big E and Roman people cared about, although I think most people knew it was obvious what was going to happen. The scuttlebutt that I've gotten from the internet today and talking to people is that they were disappointed there was no big surprise. I mean, I guess the surprise is the egg. And I guess we're going to hear tonight because supposedly both rosters have to show up on Raw to be interrogated over who took this egg. Like you wouldn't just do it last night. It's $100 million, but we'll wait till tomorrow. People were disappointed there wasn't a big surprise. Most people thought that at the end of that Big E match, you were going to hear, if you smell, and here comes The Rock as a big surprise. Or you're going to see The Rock on the Titantron. Or you were going to hear Brock Lesnar's music hit. He was going to come down and decimate Roman Reigns. Something. I know most people said when Big E was pinned, the first thing I thought of is this ain't over yet. Something's going to happen. And then it didn't. And that's the danger of the WWE talking up too much stuff. Is that you say, oh, I thought there was going to be a big surprise and there wasn't, so I'm disappointed. You really shouldn't be too disappointed. This is not a great pay-per-view because really we had, in my mind, we had two very strong matches, one decent match. And the rest of them were eh. And both of them were the Survivor Series matches were eh. The Damian Priest Nakamura match, very badly booked. Okay in execution, but very badly booked. So I think it's right down the middle. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there were times when I said this is definitely an A match, and then there were times when I said this is absolute garbage. The Pizza Hut commercial battle royal was garbage. The women's elimination match and how they did it and made all the women look terribly weak was garbage. I disagree with the ending of the men's match. You know, people saying, oh, it was great they left Jeff Hardy in there. It's not. You got nothing. You're not doing anything with Jeff Hardy. Why is he left there? And why is he going over Austin Theory, who you do have plans for? Oh, maybe they'll fight and he'll pin him on. What? It doesn't matter. Bottom line of the situation is it was a hot and cold pay-per-view. It went from very good to terrible to decent, terrible, to very good again. So the best I can do with this pay-per-view is I'm going to give it a C+. And the only reason it's getting that high is because of Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, Roman Reigns, and Big E. What's your rating, Mike?
Again, I probably shouldn't do this, but because of how good the AEW pay-per-view was, for me it's going to be a C-, you know? I mean, you can't take this in a vacuum. You got to compare the two pay-per-views, and because the AEW pay-per-view the weekend before was, what, an A-, A pay-per-view or close to it?
Yeah,
and this
say.
Was a meh pay-per-view. And look, here's something else to think about. I think they're close to flipping the bloodline, and here's why. Because you look at what the Usos were wearing in their match. They were in all white. Generally speaking, lighter colors equals being a face.
Not only that, but Roman Reigns did not cheat in that match. Roman Reigns did not do anything in that match that you would say, well, that's just blatant, flat-out cheating. He didn't do it. I think there is a definite plan to do that, but I think they're going to wait for The Rock because they don't want The Rock to be booed. I got news for you. The Rock still may be booed. Did you hear the chants of let's go Roman, let's go Big E? It was about 50-50. Now, I'm going to tell you what doesn't get a C+, that crowd. That crowd gets an A+. That crowd was noisy all night. They were very into the good matches. All you have to do, WWE, if you really want to know when you're on the right track and when you're not, is listen to that crowd. They loved Becky Lynch and Charlotte match. They loved Big E and Roman Reigns match. They loved RK-Bro and Usos match. They didn't love the other matches so much. They were noisy as hell for those matches. And even Jeff Hardy got a huge pop, which I think was really surprising. I know he's, you know, very popular, always been very popular in the New York area. Still, got a huge pop. So listen to the crowd. You'll be better off. Anyway, there was no big surprise. There was no Rock. There was no Brock Lesnar. There was no anything else. But, you know, overall, Todd, it was a okay pay-per-view. It kept my interest.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with Roman Reigns and Big E last night. Roman Reigns looks like he was wrestling as a face, practically.
I do get that feeling. I'll tell you, I do get that feeling. Now, what do we do about the situation that Raw ran the table, except for the last match? Raw won every single one of these matches, even the Battle Royal. So this does not bode well for how good a roster SmackDown has, Mike. And while they're trying, I think, to say Roman Reigns is the big, you know, big dog of SmackDown. He's the one who rules SmackDown. Okay, but if you're ruling a kingdom filled with people who can't win anyway, that doesn't make you all that powerful. I think in their effort to try to make Roman Reigns look so good that he's head and shoulders above the people on SmackDown, they've made the people on SmackDown look kind of weak and ineffectual.
Right, and frankly, this should piss off Fox, you know?
Yeah,
it really should. I mean, and look, one other just unrelated thing here, the whole Johnny Gargano situation, it doesn't seem like he signed his contract, but the rumors are is he's close, but he may or may not sign. If he doesn't sign, that's going to tell you something, and that's probably going to tell you something about Candice LeRae, but if Johnny Gargano doesn't re-sign, then, you know.
Yeah, there's rumors that they're actually so disappointed with the NXT 2.0 reboot that they're thinking of rebooting it again. They're thinking of actually rebooting it again. This was a disaster. Absolute disaster. The rebooting of NXT did not work in any way, shape, or form, and anyone who was involved in that rebooting should be seriously questioned about their credibility to understand what the fans want. Because this sure as hell ain't it. We went through a 15 or 20 minute poker showdown. What the hell is that? This is professional wrestling. I don't get it. Okay, you want to do a little poker skit, do it, but not 20 minutes of it. You're undermining a lot of good talent, and I don't blame Johnny Gargano if he wants that. I don't know where that would leave Candice LeRae. What I do know is this. With all of these releases and no one being safe, how does anyone have any loyalty to the WWE? I mean, you could show up to work tonight and be told you're gone, you're finished. How do you know? You don't know. See, that's the one thing that the WWE used to have, is they would keep people, Sergeant Slaughter and for a long time, Dean Malenko, and people behind the scenes that you're like, well, when my career is done as an athlete, they're still going to take care of me. They're going to put me in a backstage position. WWE's my family. They're going to take care of me until I'm old and gray. I'm going to have a job. And Vince prided himself on that to a certain extent. If you didn't betray them in some way, you were always considered family, and you had a job. And I told everyone a long time ago, when you let go some minor workers that you had held on to that weren't even making any really much money, Zack Ryder, he was considered like, well, okay, he's done everything he's supposed to do. He's never going to win a major championship. He's not going to be used in any particular way, neither is Curt Hawkins. But, man, those guys are loyal to the company, and because they were so loyal for so long, Vince is loyal to them, and they're always going to have a job here, and they're always going to be taken care of. That's, you know, stars could look at that. Stars could walk in and say, there's those guys who put us over all the time, but you know what? They're being well taken care of. They don't need to worry about anything. Vince loves them for it. He appreciates them. No, he cut them. Then he started cutting superstars like, Bray Wyatt. And people were like, well, he's their top seller of merchandise. If you can cut them, if there's no loyalty to the guys who are helping put us over, and there's no loyalty to the top sellers, there's no loyalty to anybody. There's no loyalty to a soul. And if there's no loyalty to a soul, why do I have loyalty to this company? And that's when you start worrying. And that's what I'm worried about right now. If I had a contract with the WWE and I was in main events, I'd be worried. Because I'd say, I can't guarantee anything. They let Bray Wyatt go. I can't guarantee anything. They let Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins, who was here forever, go. And should have been lifers just because of their loyalty to the business. Once that happens, Mike, all bets are off, and I can guarantee you that the locker room is not as feeling as secure as they should.
Right, and think about this. I bet everybody thought that Ric Flair was going to be there until he died.
Yep.
Right?
I sure did.
I mean, think about it. And they cut him. You know, and that's, again, even though she gave a good match with Becky Lynch, I mean, what are you going to say when they decide, you know, if they happen to decide that Charlotte Flair is not worth enough to the company, you know?
I agree with you. At this stage of the game, Mike, it's very difficult to imagine anybody having any major loyalty to the WWE because you don't normally be loyal to a company that's not loyal to you. And again, I warned everyone when Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins left, I said this is a bad sign. Not because you're going to use them, but because everyone sort of looked at them and said, you know, they're low guys on the totem pole. If Vince will take care of them for their loyalty, he'll certainly take care of me for mine. When they left, people were like, well, Jesus, how much were they making? Not that much. And Vince cuts them for the little amount of money that they were making. As loyal as they were to them, to him, that was a bad sign. I told everybody at the time, this is a very bad sign. This is not going to go well with the locker room. Then when you get guys like Bray Wyatt and Keith Lee and Karrion Kross, people are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait a minute. I could even come up through the NXT system and be a champion and a superstar. And it doesn't matter. They'll let me go in a heartbeat. And when you know your job is only one day away from becoming extinct, how well are you going to rest at night? How well are you going to perform? You can't under these circumstances. There's three or four guys in this whole company who realize I'm not going anywhere. And maybe one or two who don't give one damn if they do, like Brock Lesnar, Goldberg, they don't care. Aside from that, everybody's on the chopping block and everybody knows it. Todd, let me get your rating on this pay-per-view.
I got to go with you on this one. I got to give it a C+.
It wasn't horrible, folks, but it wasn't what it should have been. And it was so heavy onto Raw's better, except for Roman Reigns. Raw's better, except for Roman Reigns, that it's almost sad because Raw's not better. To be perfectly honest, well, you know, now Raw's gotten a lot more people in that I do like, but Raw's not better. And I think maybe they did this to appease USA, but like Mike said, I'd love to know how Fox feels today. How many matches were there? 7? One match. 6-1. That's a blowout. Roster on Raw tonight, and we'll be back here tomorrow to talk about it. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.